The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Hello again. Just having a moment to transition. It may be in the transition to say thank you so much for your practice. It's no small thing. So social and communal harmony, Buddhist teachings. To recap a bit where we've been, what we're talking about is that the practice of social and communal harmony in the Buddhist teachings begins with right view. It's this understanding of the efficacy of our action. And then yesterday we discussed how the right view is made real by our effort, by our endeavor in personal training. We talked about Rahula's repeated reflection. And then for many of us, sooner or later, we'll encounter a state that challenges us in some important ways. And I think is especially relevant when we're considering social and communal harmony, how to live and act in a harmonious way with others. And that state, that emotion, is anger. Let's start with this short story from the suttas. It features someone named Sakka. The texts say that Sakka was the ruler of the heavens of the 33, and is likened kind of more to a regional ruler than a monarch. Interestingly, characterized as imperfect, but someone of great faith and devotion. So Sakka approached the Buddha, and the usual approach, paid his respects, stood to one side, and then he said this: having slain what, does one sleep soundly? Having slain what, does one not sorrow? What is the one thing, O Gotama, whose killing you approve? The Buddha responds, having slain anger, one sleeps soundly. Having slain anger, one does not sorrow. The killing of anger, O Sakka, with its poisoned root and honeyed tip. This is the killing the noble ones praise. For having slain that, one does not sorrow. It's a rather provocative turn of conversation. I never hear the Buddha talking of killing. I think this was for rhetorical effect. And we'll add some qualifications. First about anger. And the first thing is that in the way Gill translates or distinguishes this, makes a clear line between anger and hostility. And anger, we can take, that's just good information. That's good information from our system. Something that may be saying, oh, this is important to me. Or I have a boundary here that needs respecting. So anger can be good information for us. And it's useful not to be slain. And so the Gill will translate the word here that Bhikkhu Bodhi was translating as anger as hostility, which has something of the edge of the impulse to harm or cruelty, the opposite of this compassion practice we were just doing. There are all sorts of anger, of course, and stay for longer or shorter times. One that's particularly sticky, I think for many of us, a form of anger, a form of hostility that can linger is resentment. And there's an interesting sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya where the Buddha talks about 9 variations on how resentment is conditioned by our thinking. And in that teaching, more or less, it's ways that we rehearse and re-rehearse and re-rehearse, this other person did harm to me or my loved ones, or they're supporting my foes. There's this really great expression in English, nursing a grudge, where we're feeding a hostility. I think there's a clue to how hostility is harmful to us in the teachings that said that hostility is what an enemy would wish for us. And I have to wonder, after our first couple of days of teaching, is Rahula's repeated reflection even possible when we're heavily under this way of hostility? Do we have the presence of mind to be able to reflect? Is the action I'm about to take harmful? Is it helpful? Is it cause for affliction for myself, for others, or for both? Or is it for our well-being? It's challenging to do this when we're under the sway of hostility. The poison root and honeyed tip has such an influence. We're encouraged to be circumspect, of course, in the interest of our own welfare and social and communal harmony. So a story I'm about to tell, I think without mentioning it, is pointing to what I think of as the missing piece when it comes to practicing with hostility, and that is our practice of mindfulness of emotions. Now, when I was quite young, I learned how to drive on an old Volkswagen Bug. It's like a tan Volkswagen from the 1970s. And young me, I was sort of amazed at the power of the clutch. And up until then, I had thought there was this direct relationship. You press the gas and the car goes. So just one-to-one. Anytime there's gas, the car is going to move if the engine is running. So it was fascinating for me to realize that if I press the clutch down while the engine is moving, I could rev the engine. And no matter how much gas it got, however loud it got, the wheels didn't turn. It didn't move. The car didn't move. And I think in just the same way, our mindfulness practice, when it comes to strong emotions like hostility or anger, our mindfulness practice can act as the clutch. That actually the emotion, the information of anger can rev up through the body. And with this practice of mindfulness, we can allow that revving, let's say, to come through as loud as it wants to get and pass right through. And we don't move. We don't go into movement. We don't engage. If we let go of the clutch, something else might happen. But to feel our emotions through the body. I think this might have been what was happening during this other story with the Buddha. There's a time that he's at the squirrel sanctuary and someone comes to him named Bharadvaja the Rude. And it's said that Bharadvaja had found out that someone in his caste had gone forth into, he'd become a monk, a student of the Buddha. So the Bharadvaja comes to the Buddha and it says, angry and displeased, he went to the Buddha and abused and insulted him with rude, harsh words. And when he'd spoken, the Buddha said to him, this is amazing to me. Rather than the Buddha more or less taking the bait, returning insult with insult, he does this. He says to Bharadvaja, what do you think? Do friends and colleagues and relatives and family members, do they come and visit you? And Bharadvaja responds, yes, sometimes they do. Do you then serve them fresh and cooked foods and savories? The Buddha asks, sometimes I do. But if they don't accept it, who does that food belong to? In that case, it belongs to me, says Bharadvaja. The Buddha says, in the same way, when you abuse, harass, and attack us, who do not abuse, harass, and attack, we don't accept it. It still belongs to you. it still belongs to you. Someone who, he says, when abused, harassed, and attacked, abuses, harasses, and attacks in return, is said to eat the food and have a reaction to it. But we neither eat your food, nor do we have a reaction to it. It still belongs to you. It still belongs to you. I don't know if you can imagine this, but someone coming forward with an insult, with hostility, and having the presence of mind that reflection, that moment of pause, that push of the clutch that allows their strong energy to come to you. And then we have the moment of pause and reflection and choice to decide how to engage. It's not automatic that we meet insult with insult. And in this case, the Buddha is kindly explaining that those insults, he can keep, the Bharadvaja can keep them. They're not his. So in the Buddha's sort of keen analysis in other places, he talks about various causes of anger, hostility, and resentment. Some of them are things like envy, stinginess. Some of them are linked to craving and seeking and attachment. And some of them are linked to views, strong holdings of opinions. But there are these wise ways that I think we start to encounter how to live with the very human impulse to anger, how to respond to it in others. And I think we can base what will become a full, rich, functioning practice in Rahula's repeated reflection, knowing before, during, and after, is this action I'm about to take helpful? Is it harmful? So in another teaching, Sakka again says, when I'm angry, I don't speak harshly and I don't praise my virtues. I keep myself well restrained out of regard for my own good. I keep myself well restrained. Many other teachings on anger, but I want to mention something about some other practices. So we have Rahula's repeated reflection. We have our practice of mindfulness of emotions, of course. And then maybe a third set that I want to mention is something we did earlier, actually the inspiration for the meditations this week. In a sutta on ways of removing resentment, three of them are three of the Brahmaviharas. We can take up the practice of loving kindness, the practice of compassion, the practice of equanimity. And in a sort of way, condition our affective responses so that we can live in a harmonious way as best we can. I like to think of this inner cultivation, this training of our affect, as kind of like giving our heart and mind a number of options, well-practiced options, so that when we're under pressure, these things like kindness and compassion present themselves. So to close for today, I'll just say, in exploring and dealing with anger, we can make an effort to get close to it through repeated reflection. And there are distinctions to be made that show us that anger isn't a lump. It too is made of conditions. It's varied. And our vision of it is such that it undermines anger's enchantment. As with the other aspects of the personal training, we interrogate anger's causes and effects through repeated reflection. So even with anger, hostility, very human aspects of our experience, we practice with these diligently and we find ways to be with them. We discover them for ourselves. How to live with these in a way that's of benefit to ourselves, a benefit to others, and a benefit to everyone. This is what practice is asking of us. Tomorrow we'll move on to good friendship and mutual benefit. May our practice together this morning nourish us, and may it be that our reflections, our meditation, our faith in the Buddha's path, may that be for the support of social and communal harmony in small ways and large. Please take very good care of yourselves.